Hey everyone, welcome to the Healthful Woman Podcast, the fastest growing podcast in women's health. Today's Monday, March 18th, 2024.
My guest today is Megan Heaton, and we are going to talk about VBAC. Megan is a doula, a birth educator, a VBAC mom herself, and she started the VBAC Link, which is a website, blog, podcast, and wealth of resources related to VBAC. The mission of VBAC Link is to, quote, make birth after cesarean better by providing parents and doulas with support and evidence-based information. Awesome. I've been a guest on the VBAC Link podcast a few times, and I'm excited to have Megan as a guest on this podcast to talk about VBAC in general and what they're doing at the VBAC Link to support their mission.
All right. Reminder for everyone listening on Apple or Spotify, I would really appreciate it if you could rate this podcast, preferably with 5 stars. Please do leave comments and suggestions. I read all of them. Also, keep emailing us any questions you have for our mailbag podcast. We got a bunch of them coming up. Keep sending questions and we'll keep doing them. To send them in, you can email us directly at hw@healthfulwoman.com or go to our website, healthfulwoman.com, and click on the link that says, send us your questions. Remember, these questions are for mailbag podcasts, not personal medical advice that you need answered ASAP. If that is a question you have, please ask your own doctor. Finally, the book that Emily Oster and I wrote, The Unexpected, is coming out in about 6 weeks, end of April. We have a link on our website. If you want to pre-order it, please take a look at that. The book is tremendous. All right. Thanks for listening. See y'all next week.
Welcome to today's episode of Healthful Woman, a podcast designed to explore topics in women's health at all stages of life. I'm your host, Dr. Nathan Fox, an OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist practicing in New York City. At Healthful Woman, I speak with leaders in the field to help you learn more about women's health, pregnancy, and wellness.
All right, Megan, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for agreeing to come on. How are you doing today?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm doing great. So great.
This is like in basketball when one team comes to one court and they play, then they go to the other court and play. This is, you know, I've been on your podcast, and so now you're coming on mine. It's a fair trade.
It's so fun. And we've had you on multiple times and everyone just loves your podcast. We always get emails about it.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. Yeah. True or not, I appreciate it.
No, it's like really good. It's really true. And it's like really good stuff. They love you.
Oh, that's very sweet. Well, you are the lord of the VBAC Link, right? I don't know what you're the founder, the director, what is your official title there? You're everything. You are the link.
I'm the link. Yeah, I'm the co-founder of the VBAC Link, and I'm the host of the VBAC Link podcast.
Amazing. And you yourself are also a VBAC mom, and you're a birth doula and an educator.
Yep. Yeah, so I had 2 cesareans and then went on to have a VBAC and then actually became a doula, inspired by actually after my second C-section. So been doing the birth doula stuff for about 10 years now and just love talking about VBAC, talking about birth in general. Birth is so amazing.
Birth is cool. Birth is good stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So tell us just on a high level, and then we'll get into the details. What is the VBAC Link, if you had to describe it to somebody or all of our listeners?
Yeah, it's a one-stop shop for you to come and find like evidence-based information, positive stories, a positive circle, which can be sometimes hard during your VBAC journey. And just honestly getting all the evidence-based information that you need about VBAC, because there's so much you can Google out there and then, you know, spiral down really quickly. And so we want to try to provide, you know, all the information about VBAC and also repeat cesarean, because we know that sometimes VBAC isn't the best choice for someone or the desired choice. So learning just your options in general for vaginal birth after cesarean, and then how to also reduce cesarean.
And how long have you guys been running?
Since 2018.
So what's that, 5+ years, 5-6 years?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's your engagement like? I mean, you have people from all over the country, all over the world. How do you even sort of measure that?
Yeah, literally all over the world. We have listeners and even doulas. So we also train doulas on like knowing what it's like out there in the VBAC world and like what the stats are and, you know, the evidence. And so we have doulas and listeners from like Kuwait to Saudi Arabia to Nevada to Chicago to Utah. I mean, all over the place.
It's amazing. Tell us your story. How'd you get into this business?
You know, it all started with the first C-section. I honestly was just a mom. I was young. I was kind of young when I started having babies. And I just kind of downloaded, you know, the What to Expect app and went from there. And every week I was like, oh, my baby is this size and I should be expecting these symptoms. And that was about the education that I got. Whatever that little app told me, I was like, okay, cool. All right, maybe I'll get this, maybe I won't. And ended up, my water broke early on and I kind of just rushed right to the hospital, which was fine, but I was really in labor. And, you know, we tried to get labor going and it was starting, but about 12 hours into my labor, I was told that I probably couldn't do it and my baby wouldn't come out. And I had my beautiful baby girl be a cesarean.
And what was the reason they said the baby wouldn't come out? Was it a function of time? Like, oh, your water's been broken for X hours, or were you like stopped dilating?
Yeah.
Or was there something that made sense to you?
You know, again, I didn't really know what I didn't know. So now, no, none of it really made sense to me.
Okay.
It was 12 hours water broken. So, okay, 12 hours water broken, but I didn't really have any infection. Baby was doing super great.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing fine. I had dilated to a 3. So I was going.
Right.
And so they just said failure to progress and that my pelvis, they diagnosed me with CPD on my op reports. I didn't say that at the time that my pelvis was too small. They just put it in my op reports. And so, you know, I was failure to progress. And
right.
I didn't know. And I don't know. It was just like, okay, if he says that, great, you know. And so off we went to the OR and it wasn't necessarily traumatic by any means. It was just not what I desired and very different, right? Not what I expected birth to look like, which again, I didn't have very much education. So I don't really know what I really expected. It just wasn't that. So I started kind of, you know, researching other options when we started tribing for our second, and I learned that there was, you know, VBAC after a cesarean, or, you know, VBAC. And I was like, oh, cool. Maybe I should try that. And I talked to my doctor and he said, yeah, that's fine. We can totally let you try. It's no problem. So I was like, okay, cool. And I honestly didn't, again, get a lot of education. Like,
same doctor?
Same doc.
Okay.
Yeah. Which coincidentally was the doc that delivered me via cesarean in 1988.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So he was my mom's provider and for my sister and I and my aunt and my cousin. You know, he's just, you know, it's very common to be like, oh, go to my OB and then that's just who you're with, or go to my midwife and that's who you're with.
Yeah.
Right. And so I was like, cool. So I ended up staying 36 weeks. I had a pretty deep intuition feeling that I should research switching. But I literally told people this. I said, I don't want to cheat on him. I don't want to cheat on him. Like, we were in some relationship, right?
Yeah.
And like, I was like, he's helped me so far. And he says that he'll support me, right? And so I just kind of stayed, but I had this feeling like, oh, I don't know, you should switch. There were some things that were said and done that I was just like, I don't like that they're talking about those things. So anyway, so I didn't switch. And then I found out about a doula and was like, oh, I'm going to hire this doula. And my husband was like, no, you're not. No, we're not. That's not cool. We're not doing that. So he wasn't really on board with the doula thing.
Because of the cost, or because it was like hokey? Like, what would be the downside?
He just said he felt like he was going to be replaced, because I was like, he's like, why do you want someone? And I was like, I just want someone that has some deeper education and knowledge and can support me.
Right.
And
so you're basically saying I want to replace you, which is fine.
Yeah,
I would think most men would want that. Like, really? Like, I get an out? Like, I can,
right?
You
sign
know.
Me up. Yeah, I know.
I get a coworker in this endeavor. That's amazing. All right.
Right. Yeah. And he was like, not really like up for spending money, which I get. Like,
okay, they're expensive,
we were, like,
potentially
super well off. Yeah, I mean, back then they were like nothing. But anyway, so he was like, no, and I tried to explain. I'm like, they're for you too, you know. But he just wasn't on board, which I was like, okay, cool. Whatever. I'll stay here. Won't hire a doula. All will be well. I'm going to do this feedback thing. And I started like diving in to like, as you know, little short time I have, I'm like literally 36 and a half weeks diving in. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much scattered information to the point of like, this is the worst thing you could do to this is the best thing you could do. And like, I couldn't figure out where that happy medium was or if there was, and it was really emotional and just hard, just so hard. And so, yeah, so at 38 weeks, 4 days, my husband was out of town because he was like, you're not going to have the baby. You're 38 weeks. Fine. And sure enough, my water broke. So
my doula would have been in town, buddy.
Right? I thought that. I was like, I could have had a doula right now. As I'm like frantic. Not, I wasn't like frantic, but it was like, oh my gosh, like this is happening way sooner than I expected. My husband's in Texas. We don't even know if he's going to make it. But I also kind of felt this sense of like peace of like, I'm good. I'm fine. Like, there's like water's color is good. There's no infection signs. I check my temperature. I'm looking good, sort of cramping, but not really. And anyway, he got home and him and my mom kind of like ganged up and they're like, we have to go to the hospital. Talked about dry birth. And I was like, what? I don't even know what that means. But my mom was like, you're going to have a dry birth. Have you ever heard of, I'm sure you've heard of this.
A dry birth?
A dry birth is what she said.
I'm not familiar with that term.
She said, when your water breaks, everything up inside dries up and it's bad for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do we know? We know that babies keep peeing and all things, right?
Okay. No, that's not hashtag fake news on that one.
Exactly. Right. Okay. But again, I was only like a week into like education, honestly. And so I was like, oh, okay, sure. Oh, I don't think that's real, but okay, fine. So we go to the hospital.
You're the most agreeable person ever, by the way. Just listen to you. Yeah, it's all good.
I was, and I am not now. Okay. It's funny, if you hang out, like, my husband's like, oh, she is the most stern person. If she wants something, she's going to get it.
All right.
So I've changed my ways a little bit. But I'm a very, like, non-confrontational, like, I don't really want to cause havoc. You know, I just want
to
be liked and okay and not cause argument. I don't know.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, cool. So we go to the hospital and they're like, you are a whopping 1 centimeter. And I was like, sweet. Like, I was like totally positive about it. Yeah. My husband's like, we have a long time. I'm like, well, we could be at home, but you made me come here. So anyway, so I started laboring, slowly laboring as in like contracting every 20 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was exhausted. I think he just crashed from the hype of getting home and not sure if he was going to miss his baby's birth. And so he passes out in the corner. My mom's gone with my toddler and I'm just hanging out with a nurse who coincidentally enough was also a doula. And we just had the best time. And I was like starting to like feel and get into my groove and all was well. And anyway, it was like, I don't know, it was probably 10 hours later. I was still like 1 centimeter, like not really contracting. And I started begging for Pitocin, who begs for Pitocin?
Right.
Like, I was like, literally like, just give me Pitocin, give me something, give me something. And the provider just said, no, that you can't, it's a contraindication. We can't do Pitocin with a VBAC. And
was it your understanding that it was his thought or that the hospital had like a policy? Because some hospitals do you have a sense of what it was?
He wasn't in there at the time, but the nurse said the OB said he's not able to, and so that could have completely been the hospital, but then I know that they do. So at the time though, right, could have been 2014.
Yeah,
it's a long time ago.
Yeah,
10 years ago. So anyway, so I was like, okay, and so I was like moving and like trying, and then the nurse shift happened, and she was like, hey, we're gonna prep you for a cesarean. And I was like, what? It's not what I want. And she's like, yeah, like it's been too long. Your water's broken. You're not progressing. Can't give you anything. And I was like, no, I really want to talk to my doctor. So my doctor came in, and he kind of just put some fear in my husband. He just said, like, it's not going to happen. You're putting your baby at risk. Kind of said some not so nice words to me.
Really?
And yeah, he just told me things like, wake up and smell the coffee. Like, give it up. Like, this isn't going to happen for you. You know, like, not not like building up things.
Not ideal. We'll leave it at that.
I felt really put in a corner because my husband was like, yeah, babe, like it's your baby's health. Like we're not going to do this all just so you don't have to have the C-section. Like, okay. So anyway, so I asked for an hour. I said, just give me an hour. Let me walk. And I never experienced a contraction after that. Like that I felt, you know, that like I could tell you that I had. I think just like everything just tensed up. And I said, okay, fine. Let's go down and walk down to the OR. And yeah, had a repeat cesarean. And it was good. Like I got to watch it, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I got to really be part of my birth. And they talked to me and we played music. And like, you know, in an undesired birth, it was the most desired I could get. If that makes sense.
Right. Right. Meaning they were being kind. They just weren't really on board, obviously, with the idea of a
with my original plan.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was grateful. I was really grateful. So anyway, so we got into the postpartum like PACU unit and it was pitch black, you know, nursing a baby and all like I couldn't even focus on my baby. I was Googling how to become a doula. Like it was the weirdest thing. So I like felt fire inside of me and signed up to become a doula before I even left the hospital. And that's when I knew for sure that I was going to be going for a VBAC after two cesareans. So that's literally like where the VBAC link started.
Did it start before you actually had your VBAC?
It didn't. It didn't quite start. I guess I should say my partner at the time was eyeballing me. She's like, I was like thinking of who I wanted to start this thing with. Mm-hmm. And it was like you. And then you had your VBAC and it was like, definitely.
We got you.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you achieve your VBAC? What'd you have to do?
So I got my op reports. I really wanted to have a better understanding of really why they said I had a C-section for both of those babies. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of ruled out the fact that I was like, okay, failure to progress and both times and CPD, essentially. I was like, okay, I believe that I can do this. Like, I believe my babies are small. I mean, they're 7 and 6 pounds, pretty small. And so I ruled that out, like, okay, cool. And then it was the hunt to find a provider. And, you know, we talked about this on our podcast, like, there are going to be providers out there that just aren't on board or aren't comfortable with it. And it's not up to us to force that upon them, like our desire on them. And that's kind of what I was finding. I would go and I'd interview one and they would kind of say some things and I'm like, okay, cool. You're not going to be on board. I appreciate your time. I'll move on.
Right.
You know? And then there were some that I was like, ooh, you're potential. This is good. And so I finally found, I did a lot of interviewing and I did it before I was pregnant because I wanted to be in a different space.
Yeah.
Emotionally. Just prepping, not like pregnant. And
well,
anyway,
also you have time when you're, you know, it's
yes.
This is like one of the biggest themes of like everything I talk about in this, not just for VBAC, but for all anything where the pregnancy or prenatal care is going to be different in any way, and you have an opportunity to prepare before you get pregnant. It's so much better. Because you have time, you have an opportunity to ask questions, you can shop around, so to speak. And that way, when you get pregnant and you're nauseous and vomiting and tired and logistically and doing all these other things, you're not at the same time trying to sort this out. You already have a plan in place. It's like if you're going on vacation, you know, you could say, all right, I'm just going to fly to France and I'll figure it out when I get there. And people could do that. But most people are like, all right, what hotel am I going to stay at? You know, let's make a dinner reservation. Mm-hmm. Where do we want to go on these days? Let's get a tour book. Like, most people are going to plan for that in some capacity. And if you can do that for your pregnancy, why wouldn't you? I mean, so you don't always have an opportunity to, but if you can, it's like so much better logistically.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And so many people are like, what? You're not even pregnant. Like, why are you talking to people about this? And I'm like, because I'm in a different headspace and why not? Like exactly what you were saying. Like, sure. Yeah. Go on a vacation. You'll probably have a great time and you can have some bumps in the road, but why not prepare before and feel a lot more prepared and satisfied with like your plan and knowing that sometimes bumps can happen. But yeah, that's how I was. And I actually interviewed 12 providers.
Wow. Okay.
Oh lot of providers, but I wanted providers in different hospitals. Mm-hmm. I wanted to fill the hospital. I wanted to fill midwife versus, you know,
yeah,
versus OB versus like family care. I wanted to know, like literally I wanted to know what was going to be best for me. And I found a provider and was like, okay, you're it. You are incredible. I cannot wait. When I get pregnant, I'll call you. And so, yeah, so I got pregnant.
What was it that you said him?
Yeah.
What was it that made him the one? Like, what was it, just a sense, like a gut feeling, or did he say something? Did he have an experience that was, you know, what was it about him that made you choose him?
Yeah, I took my op reports to all of those visits, and the providers that were like, I don't really jive, they would like scowl or be like, you know, like,
yeah,
kind of like doing that thing, or they would pull the, well, if you were my daughter or my wife,
mm-hmm.
and like, that's what it was like. And he didn't really say that. He was reviewing. He's like, okay, cool. He's like, so it looks like they're, you know, they diagnosed you with a smaller pelvis and that your body, you know, didn't progress. He's like, but really what I see is just you weren't allowed the time. And I don't see anything here that tells me that you shouldn't be able to go for a VBAC. And I feel very comfortable in supporting you. And it was just that simple.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, that's okay. Yes. And then we talked about the hospital and he's like, this is how the hospital would work. This is their policy. He's like, this is the reason why I would have suggest a cesarean. These are the reasons I would say, why don't we induce? And it was like, just all of the way he spoke to me, everything that I had learned, you know, at this point, that was like, okay, you're following evidence-based care. And I like this. I like this. You feel like my guy that I want in my corner. And so, yeah, so I started care with him and it was wonderful. I felt absolutely supported every time I went. And then I hit around 20 weeks and, you know, things were looking good. But I attended a birth as a doula. I was a doula at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an out-of-hospital birth, which I had attended, but not many. And anyway, it was Christmas Eve. It was so amazing. And this midwife something about her, she just blew me away. I was like, ooh, I like you. And I left and all I could think, it was like Christmas Eve night. I'm like hanging out with my kids, but all I can think about is like, you should go talk to her. But that's like completely opposite of my plan. And like, you know, usually it's if you don't have support, go find a provider. But I did have support. So it was confusing me why I was thinking this, you know. So the holidays finished up and I was 24 weeks and I went and interviewed her and I was like, I think I need to switch. And it just didn't make sense, but it just felt right, you know.
Okay.
And so because at this point I had both a professional, like as a doula relationship with this OB and a personal, I did feel comfortable in going and saying, hey, this is going to be my plan. Can you be my backup? Can you be my, hey, if I need to transfer, you're my guy. And he, you know, let me know he was uncomfortable with the idea of me birthing out of hospital, which completely understood, but something felt right about it. So I did. So I switched and he was like, yeah, I'll support you, which I think also says a lot in him, you know,
yeah.
Someone leaving his care for an out of hospital birth and a VBAC after two cesarean birth. I think the world of him to this day. So anyway, I did. I went on and I actually did dual care. So I kind of like stayed with him too, like through pregnancy mm-hmm. a little bit and ended up going and I had a 42 hour long labor. So it's a little long.
was your husband on board with this?
So at first he was like, I don't really know. This seems like a weird route to go. And I was like, I know. I was like, but I feel really good about it. And he was like, ah. And I was like, listen, I have always just said like fine in the past. And I just need to know that I followed my heart in this birth. And he was like, okay. He's like, you've done way more research. You feel more comfortable. You have a plan A, you have a plan B. And I even had a plan C for if it was like true, true emergency and I didn't have time to just like lollygag to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I had like an out-of-hospital network with a provider there that I established care with.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had all the plans and he was like, okay, cool. It's fine. Whatever. I was like, okay. So anyway, so yeah, so my water broke. Just like my last two, like early on, kind of annoying, but we did it. I had a beautiful feedback, and I really didn't have any complications or tearing, and so it worked out in like the best way possible. And I know that sometimes out of hospital birth doesn't, right? It doesn't work out like that, or it's not suggested, or it's not right. And I know a lot of people wouldn't suggest it for me, but it did happen, and it was beautiful, and I'm very grateful for it. But it definitely umped my passion for VBAC even more in just helping people navigate and also feeling safe in hospital.
Right. I mean, I was going to say that, you know, listen, I would not have been a big fan of you laboring at home right after two sections either. It doesn't mean something is going to go wrong, but I would have had concerns like your doctor did. But the thing is, the unfortunate part is it's almost as if you were pushed to that. You weren't, because, you know, mm-hmm, the doctor, again, was going to do it for you, but you felt that because of the experiences of your first two births, which were, it sounds like, unfortunate. I mean, it doesn't sound like you needed a C-section the first time around, or even the second time around. It maybe would have ended up that way anyways, maybe not, who knows. But you certainly, it doesn't sound like you were given a fair shake. And you certainly had that impression, whether it's true or not, that you didn't feel like you had a real chance. And so you're turning to another option. And I think that that's really like the unfortunate part. When I hear this, I'm like, yep, I'm like, ugh, like, you know, like this, again, everything worked out great. So it's not like a bad situation, but like, I would have felt like, oh my God, like I have this, you know, this woman is turning to do her second, a VBAC after two C-sections at home because she didn't really have an opportunity to deliver vaginally safely her first two times around. And I think that's where we dropped the ball medically.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that we focus a lot on our podcast. Like, we just shared it, or I just recorded a podcast today talking about like unmedicated VBAC in the hospital, like, and shared the most beautiful experience. And I'm like, this is 100% possible.
Right.
And it does. It breaks my heart. I mean, we have a lot of people, I see people like, I have to go unassisted. And I'm like, you know, it's not necessarily what I support as a person, as me, as a person, just like you were like, I don't know if I cringe a little bit, you know, going out of the hospital. But unfortunately, a lot of the times people feel so desperate, yeah, to have a different experience, to have someone believe in their capability of giving birth. And so we turn to routes. And again, like, I'm so grateful that my experience was good and positive and all was well. But yeah, I think one of the reasons why I felt so impacted, like looking back, was my provider was good, but I kept getting comments from the nurses like, hey, like, have you called the hospital? I don't know. They're not going to support this. And so I started having doubt about that. And then, you know, 42 hour long labor, 36 hours water broken. Like, I don't know if I would have had a VBAC.
Right. Fair.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. Wow.
Because it took me a while, right?
Yeah. 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 It's hard,
so
it's hard to know.
That's hard. But the biggest thing I think, you know, in our community is, we're going to educate on all the options, on all the evidence, and then encourage our community members to make the best choice that feels right and safest for them, mm-hmm, you know, by providing. And so I think that it's super important to note that, like, hospital birth is beautiful.
Right.
It is beautiful. And it can be safe. And you can be supported. And yeah, like you said, there's a lot of people, including me, that didn't feel like I would get that.
Wow. In your community, what are the biggest sort of questions you're getting, or the biggest comments, or sort of the engagement that you're getting? What are you finding are the common themes that are coming up in the people who go to VBAC Link?
Yeah. So biggest thing is people being too scared to VBAC in general, scared of uterine rupture. Mm-hmm. A common theme is that providers are putting out really high, crazy numbers that aren't necessarily evidence-based. And so people come and they're like, we want to learn more about this uterine rupture thing, mm-hmm, right? And what are the real stats? Then people come to our community looking for providers, looking for people telling their stories and listing providers because they want support. Mm-hmm. So the support is really desired. And then induction. Those are like some of the three things. Is like, my doctor said I can have a VBAC, but I can't be induced. Or my doctor said I can have a VBAC, but have to be induced by this day. Right. So it's the same thing with like epidural. We've got like, my doc said I can VBAC, but I have to have an epidural. Or my doc says I have to have VBAC, but I can't. And then I'm like, I'm scared of going unmedicated and I really want a hospital birth. well, I'm like scared of the epidural, or I'm, you know, all the things. Like, but those are some of like really the most common, is like looking truly for support in their area. I mean, if you were in our community, it would probably break your heart to see how many people are just so desperate to just find support. And there's so much out there.
Right.
Right. There's so much out there. Sometimes we just don't know all the names.
Right.
So they come and look for support, and that includes their families. Sometimes our families aren't supportive because they say things like, my mom, like, you're going to have a dry birth. Like, what? Again, hashtag false information. Right. You know, and so they just don't know what they don't know. And then really just wanting to know their ability. Like, can I be induced? What are my options? Honestly, so many people saying like, at 37 weeks, tell me all the things I can do to induce my body. Mm. And then, and it, that kind of breaks my heart.
Right.
Like, why are we pushing our bodies at 37 weeks, you know?
Right. Where
to do, I don't know.
Where do you get the information that you pass on as evidence-based? How do you glean that? Do you go through websites? Do you go through talking to people, through your own experiences? Like, how do you find what you're going to share with your, you know, with your community?
Well, like, ACOG is a big one. So for, because we have a large like US based following, ACOG, or we'll go through like the midwives groups and studies, we'll look at Cochrane reviews, evidence-based birth, we think highly of, we really love them. And they help us like turn studies into English a little bit.
Yeah.
Like podcasts like yours, evidence-based, you know, other OBs that are out there like sharing, and midwives that are sharing studies. So it's our evidence base isn't just like, oh, well, in 367 births, I saw this. Like, creating my own study is like, hey, like, we want to make sure we're giving you solid, concrete evidence.
Right.
So you can make the best choice, you know, for you. Like, this is what the evidence says about induction. This is what the evidence says about an epidural. This is what the evidence says about these interventions or uterine rupture.
Right.
We really want them to know, because again, like I was cramming, trying to cram a whole bunch of information in and finding the scariest thing to like, you know, the total opposite.
Right. I imagine you get a lot of positive feedback from your members. You know, thank you for helping me. Thank you for helping me find this. I really love this. Have you gotten pushback?
Yeah, there's here and there, some people will kind of push back, like, especially for if we share like, you know, an out of hospital birth story. Because in our community, we share VBAC stories all over the world in all shapes and forms, right?
It's a story. People tell their stories.
It's their story, and it's their story to share.
Right.
Doesn't mean that their story is the right choice for any individual. It's just their story.
Right.
Right. Just same thing with me. Like, my story was right for me, but that doesn't mean it's right for the person down the street.
Right.
So yeah. So once in a while, when we have some home birth stories, we'll get some like, oh my gosh, why are you advocating for home birth? And it's not necessarily that we're even advocating. We're just sharing this, the information.
Right.
Or yeah, we had like a twin feedback, and it was like, that's not safe. I'm like, well, it's not necessarily true. Like, she was in the hospital and in a controlled environment with a supportive provider and gave birth vaginally with twins after a cesarean. So it seems to be where someone may not agree, or where someone may have unprocessed trauma and then they're reactive.
Yeah, fair.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, we'll share like a healing CBAC, cesarean birth after cesarean. And it's like, well, I didn't come here for CBAC stories. I came here for VBAC stories. But why would we not share a CBAC story?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So yeah. Or like sometimes, like, you know, studies can vary, especially like, say, uterine rupture. There can be like one study that's like slightly off from another study. They're not like exactly the same. And so we may share one study that we feel has pretty good evidence, but like someone's pulling from another one saying that we're maybe be pushed back, right? That we're not sharing the full information.
Right.
So yeah, so we get pushed back here and there, but most of it is pretty positive again, because we're not like advocating for any specific. We're just advocating for you to know the options and make the best choice.
Amazing. Yeah, listen, I love what you're doing. It's really a very similar mission to what we're doing here in this podcast. Yours is obviously a little bit more focused, which is great. And ours is a little broader in terms of, you know, with this, which is also, you know, there's room for both, amazing, obviously. But no, listen, I think that it's about education. And like you said, there's a lot of weird stuff out there and on the Google, a lot of rabbit holes, a lot of places that aren't applicable, that aren't correct, that whatever. And it's important for people to have places, spaces to find information that's helpful, that's relevant, that's valuable, that's unbiased, and really to just get it and, you know, to start taking control of their health and making choices for themselves, you know, with the help of their, you know, doctors and midwives. But to really think about this, and education's the key. So I love that you're doing this. How do my listeners find you?
Oh, well, thank you so much. I agree. And yeah, we're everywhere. We're Instagram, Facebook, on all the podcast platforms. And you can just find us by searching the VBAC link or the VBAC link, and you'll find us. And VBAC is VBAC.
Wonderful. Megan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and for having me on your podcast. I enjoyed it. I appreciate it. You asked great questions. It was a lot of fun. And this is great. And I look forward to working with you many times in the future.
Thank you so much. It was an honor.
Thank you for listening to the Healthful Woman podcast. To learn more about our podcast, please visit our website at www.healthfulwoman.com. That's HealthfulWoman.com. If you have any questions about this podcast or any other topic you would like us to address, please feel free to email us at hw@healthfulwoman.com. Have a great day. The information discussed in Healthful Woman is intended for educational uses only. It does not replace medical care from your physician. Healthful Woman is meant to expand your knowledge of women's health and does not replace ongoing care from your regular physician or gynecologist. We encourage you to speak with your doctor about specific diagnoses and treatment options for an effective treatment plan.